the Associate Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court.
Good morning. I'm Scott Stuckey, the Chief Judge of the Court. It's a particular pleasure for me as a native of Kansas, although not as an alumnus of KU, to be here again and to be here with the Court. At this time, it's my pleasure to transform the Stinsard Leonard Street, LLP, Lecture Hall here at KU Law School into the courtroom for the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. In doing so, the court thanks Dean Stephen Motza, Assistant Dean Arturo Thompson, Professor Pam Keller for their leadership and many efforts to make this argument possible. And with that, the court calls United States versus Frost. Is counsel for the appellant prepared to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Is counsel for the government prepared?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey and members of the court. Good morning, Dean and members of the faculty, and good morning, Jayhawks. May it please the court, I'm Robert Feldmeyer. Together with Captain Stephen Dre, I represent the appellant in this case, Specialist Nicholas Frost, United States Army. Members of the court, appellant's defense counsel alleged one and only one improper influence. Defense counsel at trial alleged that appellant's ex-girlfriend, Jennifer Moore, coached his daughter, DF, to allege an allegation of sexual abuse. Defense's theory was that Jennifer Moore coached DF to make this allegation for use against appellant in the midst of a contentious, difficult, and protracted custody battle. Defense counsel alleged that this coaching occurred before DF alleged sexual abuse and made an outcry. The military judge allowed Jennifer Moore and her then-boyfriend, Sammy Casey, to testify about this outcry. This court has consistently required, and indeed as the United States Supreme Court has consistently required, in precedent dating back to the 1830s, that a prior statement admitted as substantive evidence must precede any motive to fabricate or improper influence that is offered to rebut. The defense counsel controls whether a prior consistent statement may be admitted by controlling whether an allegation of improper influence is alleged. In this case, the defense counsel did not allege that any improper influence occurred after the time of the outcry.
So, counsel, where did things go so horribly wrong here? There's no allegation that the military judge misunderstood the law. This was a factual issue. So why didn't trial defense counsel make it explicitly clear repeatedly to the military judge that the military judge had a misunderstanding about what the facts at issue were?
Your Honor, I believe that based upon the military judge's ruling, we can't be confident that the military judge did not misunderstand the law. The military judge's ruling appears to state that because DF's integrity and reliability of her testimony had been attacked, and because there was a statement out there that was consistent with her in-court testimony, it was therefore admissible to rehabilitate her. And that's not the law. The law, of course, is that only a statement that comes before the time of the alleged influence. And the government appears in its brief to concede that the military judge got the law wrong.
Counsel, on the point about whether the mother's influence predated the initial outburst, is there any other evidence besides the Facebook posting that was 2 years after that that said, 2 years ago I made a decision after waiting a week? Is there any other evidence that this motive arose beforehand?
Well, Your Honor, the test that controls is what defense counsel alleges. And defense counsel was quite clear that his allegation was that Jennifer Moore coached DF to make an outcry, and then she did, in fact, outcry.
So are you saying that the mere allegation that there was pre-existing attempt to have her fabricate something, that all I have to do is allege it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm not sure I fully understand your question.
So does all the defense counsel have to do is allege that the motive to fabricate, right, preceded the outcry?
Your Honor, what...
Right, because, I mean, the point is we have this Facebook statement which, you know, the military, the CCA found that she was incredible in her explanation about it. But other than that, is there anything else, and is it enough?
Your Honor, the defense counsel controls the admissibility of prior consistent statements on the basis of the allegations that he makes.
But what I'm saying is, so all he has to do is make an allegation? Is that what you're saying the state of the law is? Because couldn't a defense counsel just make an allegation every time at any point in time?
I mean, in other words,
they don't have to corroborate it?
To allow the government to admit prior consistent statements, Your Honor?
No, you're saying that the defense counsel controls whether or not the prior consistent statement can come in by making an allegation, right?
Or an implication, Your Honor.
Or an implication. And what I'm saying is there's nothing else. They don't have to support it. They don't have to corroborate it. It doesn't have to be believable by some standard or another. They just have to say so.
I mean, Your Honor, I certainly would point the court to the Army Court's decision in United States v. Hood, that in which the Army Court stated, courts must guard, quote, against the importation of otherwise inadmissible hearsay statements into evidence under the guise of prior consistent statements when a charge of recent fabrication or improper influence is neither intended nor substantial. So in that vein, Your Honor, I would say that the defense needs to make a substantial allegation of improper influence, not just a hint or a whiff that somebody there was some
impropriety. What do you mean by substantial allegation? You mean like it has to be an important allegation? It has to be supported by substantial evidence? What do you mean by substantial?
At the very least, there has to be some charge that another person tampered with the testimony of a witness in some way, caused that witness to change the content of his or her testimony.
And what level of proof do they have to give with respect to the tampering?
To open the door, Your Honor? For the
to
prior
keep the evidence out.
To keep the evidence out, Your Honor. Well,
I mean, you're acting like this is a strange question, right? And it really isn't.
Well, Your Honor, the prior consistent statement only comes in if the defense counsel makes the allegation.
Right. And what I'm saying is do they merely have to make the allegation, or do they have to have some proof that the allegation is true?
I mean, they have to make the allegation, Your Honor.
That's it?
Yes, Your Honor.
No proof required?
No, Your Honor.
So what happens then? Somebody simply comes up with an allegation as defense counsel, and the statement then is not admissible? What are you using as the standard here, counsel?
If defense counsel makes an allegation of improper influence, then the government can introduce a prior consistent statement that precedes the time of the improper influence.
Okay.
But one of the questions that – the reason I asked the initial question was it's somewhat vague from looking at that Facebook post. I mean, your brief points out that, well, if she made it 2 years to the day and she struggled for a week, then the motive must have occurred 6 days beforehand. But – what if the Facebook post had talked that she said, I came up with this theory that I was going to get my kids by having this allegation of some kind, but we didn't have a specific date, so we didn't know when the improper motive arose. Are you saying that any allegation by the defense counsel as to when it arose would be sufficient, even if there was no evidence? I mean, for example, let's suppose the Facebook post said, I've been working on this for a year or so, and it was just vague. Could she still say, well, she clearly had the motive before the outburst, and therefore the outburst cannot be used?
Your Honor, the burden of the proof is on the proponent of the evidence to be adduced. It would be up to the government to prove that defense counsel, by implication or by outright representation, alleged an improper influence that postdated the time of the outcry. The government has the burden of proof, and the government would have to show that defense counsel, by implication or outright allegation, alleged an improper influence that was after the time of the prior consistent statement.
Counsel, can we shift gears a little bit? The government places a lot of emphasis on this statement about how Mrs. Moore was placing things in DF's head, which was intended to encourage her to say to Dr. Landry, as though there was some sort of motivation to influence Dr. Landry to improperly influence DF. What do you make of that statement? I mean, that's really the thing that they're focusing on. I'll have them respond, but the connection of Dr. Landry, that Dr. Landry had an improper influence on her, and that's why this evidence is coming in.
Well, Your Honor, the defense was quite clear about its position with regard to Dr. Landry. At Joint Appendix 175, defense counsel stated, quote, "Sir, in regards to the motive to fabricate, the defense's contention is not that Dr. Landry had a motive to fabricate, but that mom was placing things in the child's head which was encouraged to be said through Dr. Landry. Nowhere in the record of trial does defense counsel allege that Dr. Landry encouraged DF to change her testimony, that Dr. Landry coached DF in any way. What defense counsel alleged was that Dr. Landry was doing her job. She was a forensic interviewer, and her job was to get children ready for trial. And that's what it alleged that she did. It alleged that because she was a forensic interviewer at a forensic child abuse center, that the statements that DF made to Dr. Landry weren't medical hearsay, but that's completely different with alleging that the content of DF's testimony was somehow changed as a result of her interviews with Dr. Landry. Defense counsel never alleged that Dr. Landry committed any kind of impropriety. The rule requires not just an influence, but an improper influence. Defense counsel, A, didn't allege an influence, didn't allege any change that came out of the interviews with Dr. Landry, and B, certainly didn't allege an improper influence, i.e., a suggestive interview technique or outright coaching. Nothing of that sort is found anywhere in the record, and defense counsel, for the record, made his position on the matter quite clear. In regards to the motive to fabricate, defense's contention is not that Dr. Landry had a motive to fabricate. At other places in the record of trial, defense counsel made quite clear his position that Dr. Landry was there to make DF comfortable to testify in court. This is a forensic purpose and would place DF's testimony outside the medical hearsay exception, which is what his argument was, but it isn't an allegation of improper influence.
Can I ask you a question here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Wasn't this part of the defense theory of the case that the mother had actually done this coaching before the outcry?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was it the central theme? It seems like it was pretty much the theme or theory of the case.
It was the central theme, Your Honor. Okay. It was focused both in defense counsel's opening and closing arguments.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Let's assume we agree with you.
Yes, Your Honor.
And this goes to the prejudice you've alleged. Could you tell us why these two statements that came in, I think it was by the boyfriend and by the ex-wife, prejudiced your client, given that they basically the same statements testified to by the victim herself?
Well, Your Honor, because there's so little other evidence.
Is the problem that the issue of bolstering the child victim?
Exactly, Your Honor, especially in a case like this where the child victim at multiple times in multiple interviews had said nothing happened. There's no physical evidence. There's no eyewitness testimony. There's certainly no sexual assault, nurse examination, or anything.
But this was a judge-alone trial, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
You don't think there's a difference?
Well,
the effect of the trier effect overhearing kind of repetitive or cumulative evidence?
The trouble with that
is, as opposed to a jury or members?
Yes, Your Honor. The trouble with that is that the military judge in his ruling seemed to indicate that he viewed these statements as rehabilitating DF. That's why he admitted them in the first place, because her credibility had been attacked and it went to rehabilitate her credibility. So this court can't be convinced by any standard that the improper statements didn't play a role in confirming or in the military judge's findings in this case.
But the fact that he characterized it as such doesn't mean that necessarily that he considered that to all other things in believing the child victim. Couldn't he have simply believed the child victim based upon his own observations of her credibility, her demeanor in court?
He could
would
have.
He need, would a, I guess what I'm asking, is there a difference in what a judge sitting as a bench trial views on the issue of credibility as opposed to what members or a jury might consider in determining or assessing credibility? Is there a difference or no, in your view?
Well, Your Honor, ultimately, I think this the fact that there was a dissent in this case really shows.
But the dissent is talking about legal or factual sufficiency. And isn't that very different?
Even with the improper evidence, one judge found that the evidence was factually insufficient.
But that's one. So without I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's one.
That's one, Your Honor.
One of three.
But without that evidence, Your Honor, mm-hmm. without that evidence being considered.
Well, that means two judges disagreed with you, though.
It means two judges disagreed while considering improper evidence that they believe should be considered. When you take away that evidence, you're even lower in terms of
that. Let me return to my questions and see if you can answer them this time, which is, one, what do you believe the standard of proof is, right, the standard of proof that the defense has to elicit in order to shift the burden to the government to show this, to say that the improper influence preceded it? Like, what level of proof do they have to introduce?
What level of proof does the government have?
Does the defense have to introduce that there was improper influence that preceded the statement?
In order to open the door?
Yes.
It just has to make the allegation, Your Honor.
So just a mere allegation. They could just say that something happened.
I mean, if defense counsel in opening argument had alleged that there was an improper influence, that would be a proper matter for a rebuttal with a prior consistent statement.
Okay. And so what, in your view, is the proof of the improper influence in this case?
Of Jennifer Moore?
Yeah.
The Facebook post.
And that's it?
Well,
anything else?
Your Honor, the fact that she had, as a result of this ongoing custody battle, a clear motive to fabricate, that she did not want my client to have custody of DF or any visitation, that's clear. Your Honor, I see I'm over.
Well, that's okay. So, in your view, I'm just trying to fill out the parameters of what you believe the defense needs to do before the government has to do what it needs to do, right? So, in your view, if you said, "Your Honor, this is an ugly divorce and an ugly custody situation, and obviously the mother had a motive to get her to make this fabricated statement." Would that be enough?
That wouldn't be enough. There has to be some allegation of actual influence. The fact that she had the motive is insufficient. There has to be some allegation she actually did something.
Okay. So she had the motive, so she obviously did something. Would that be enough?
That she had the motive? She
had the motive because it was an ugly divorce, and so she clearly sought to influence her child and got her to say this. Without any other evidence, would that be enough?
I mean, it would be, Your Honor, and it's not in dispute that the defense counsel alleged that Jennifer Moore influenced. But what defense counsel alleged is that Jennifer Moore influenced DF prior to the time of her outbreak.
Right, and all I'm asking you is that all they have to say? She influenced without any proof that it actually happened, other than that you said so.
To open the door, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Captain Jonathan Reiner, and together with Major Jeremy Watford, I represent the United States. The military judge did not abuse his discretion in admitting testimony about Ms. DF's 2013 outcry to rebut the express and implied assertion that Dr. Landry influenced her testimony in 2015.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought counsel for the appellant just denied that Landry did any such thing. What's going on here?
For this court, defense counsel is denying that Dr. Landry did anything. However, the record of trial tells a different story, Your Honor. At page 175 of the joint appendix, Your Honor, there was a conversation there about how Dr. Landry was placing things, or I'm sorry, Ms. Moore was placing things in DF's head, which Dr. Landry was encouraging her to say. So the allegation...
Well, that goes to her being a conduit. I don't see that it goes to her independently making this up, assuming arguendo it's made up.
It doesn't go to her, to Dr. Landry, making something up, but what it does go to show is that trial defense counsel alleged that Dr. Landry was encouraging her to repeat something that was false. So by encouraging
false testimony,
she's
a conduit.
The military judge found as fact that there was a separate influence as of September or August. Those are the 2 months that precisely correspond with when DF began seeing Dr. Landry. That finding of fact is supported by the record of trial. And it's not clearly erroneous because it does have ample support in the record.
Counsel, can you explain that specific statement? It was that Ms. Moore, quote, was placing things in Ms. DF's head, which was encouraged to be said through Dr. Landry. What exactly does that sentence mean? I mean, one way of reading it is that Mrs. Moore was influencing DF so that DF would say things that Dr. Landry would repeat. Another is that somehow Dr. Landry had been subverted such that Dr. Landry was then asserting an influence on DF. And what does that statement mean?
I read it as both a little of column A and a little of column B. The first part of the phrase, or the quote from defense counsel, and I apologize, it's page 123 of the joint appendix. There, Ms. Moore was placing things in DF's head. So for that first clause, Ms. Moore was putting a false allegation into the head of the main witness at trial.
And if that motive arose before the initial outburst, that wouldn't be enough. Is that correct?
If that were the only thing,
if the statement had stopped at that point and the motive had arisen before the initial outbursts in the car, that wouldn't be enough.
That's correct. However, under this court's jurisprudence, under United States against Allison, a prior consistent statement need not predate every single influence that defense counsel puts out there. It need only predate one influence.
Okay, let's get to column B. That you said it was part column A and part column B.
That Dr. Landry was encouraging her to simply parrot something back without respect to whether or not it was true. That's not what the point of therapy is, Your Honor. And with respect to Dr. Landry, she is a professional who has professional obligations and she's independent of Ms. Moore. She's not someone that's under Ms. Moore's thumb, such as another sibling, a family member who would be tightly controlled. This is someone who has their own obligations and their own independent work with the victim here. So there's nothing in the record that would show that Dr. Landry is controlled by Ms. Moore. Through both express and implied charges, trial defense counsel did charge that Dr. Landry was improperly influencing Ms. DF. At page 84 of the joint appendix, trial defense counsel was talking about how Ms. DF was not consistently disclosing, but, quote, only after going to the therapist does that become a component. So there, trial defense counsel is highlighting for the finder of fact that she's only consistently disclosing after meeting with Dr. Landry. There was the charge that Dr. Landry...
Which way does that cut?
Well, when we're talking about opening the door, there's only one way for a closed door to go.
There's only one way the door to open. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that suddenly full-blown like Athena out of the head of Zeus, she starts yammering about it. And before she said no, she was mum or denied it. And what I'm saying is, which way does that cut as a matter of, I'm not going to say factual sufficiency, because we can't deal with that here, but which way does that cut as a matter of credibility?
It does show that they're trying to undermine Ms. DF's credibility through the influence of Dr. Landry.
Okay. So?
So that opens up the door for the prior consistent statement.
Right. It opens the door for the prior consistent statement.
Right. And under this court's decision in McCaskey, a prior consistent statement it's probative to show that someone had the same story both before and after alleged influence on their story. Here, that influence is Dr. Landry.
The government says it's Dr. Landry. The defense says it's this witch's brew of a marriage or a relationship that's been brewing since far before Dr. Landry appeared on the scene.
Well, the Army Court exercised its fact-finding ability to find that Ms. Moore did not cause this outcry, did not place this inside of Ms. D.F.'s head. However, the relevance isn't whether or not there was an improper influence by Ms. Moore. It's only with respect to whether or not there was something from Dr. Landry, because trial counsel was very clear. He was not offering the outcry testimony to rebut the influence of Ms. Moore. At page 126 of the joint appendix, trial counsel said that this was to rebut the influence of Dr. Landry. That was the purpose of why this came in.
Counsel, let's say that we disagree with you that that's what the record reveals. Can you talk about prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor. The statement already came in without objection through the testimony of Ms. D.F. On both her direct and her cross-examination, she said that she revealed this testimony. She specifically said that she told her mother and Mr. Casey that she was raped by appellant. The two outcry witnesses provided no additional detail beyond what Ms. D.F. herself testified about.
Now, counsel, you used the word rape, and I understand that that's the language in the statute, but that's not actually what she said, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. She said that the appellant put his penis in her mouth. Additionally,
Kent Reiner, continuing down this vein of Judge Ryan's question about the prejudice, what is your response to appellate defense counsel, Mr. Feldmeyer's position that this was the problem here was that this bolstered the credibility of the witness, the child victim, and therefore therein lies the prejudice?
Just because something is repeated doesn't make it true. I think that we all agree that. However, here there's no additional.
Well, what's the purpose of the rule then?
The purpose of the rule under McCaskey, the way that this court explained it, is to show that someone had the same story before and after the improper influence.
And isn't that to show that they're not lying?
To show that they haven't changed their story because of the influence, presumably because they're not lying. But it's more specific than just not lying. It's that they're not lying because of this influence.
Counsel, can we go back to the question that I was asking counsel for appellant about? The Army Court seemed to believe that the mother's improper influence arose after the initial outburst. And that's in that footnote, that's why they admitted this statement. As I understand appellant's argument, the improper influence arose before the initial outburst in the car. But I'm having a lot of trouble finding where defense counsel alleged that to have occurred. But it seems like the government agrees with that particular point, that the improper influence arose, that it was alleged that the improper influence arose before the initial outburst in the car. What aspect of the allegation, other than the Facebook post, which is somewhat ambiguous, suggests that the improper influence arose before the initial outburst?
Through some of Ms. Moore's testimony, she described how she split apart from appellant prior to the birth of Ms. D.F. However, that being said, I agree with the Army Court that there was no improper influence. There was only the allegation of Ms. Moore having an improper influence. I do not believe that that's something that was proved. But even more important, what's before this court to decide is not whether Ms. Moore specifically improperly influenced her, whether there was any improper influence that predated the outcry. And here, what trial counsel offered and what we're arguing before this court is that this is the alleged improper influence is that of Dr. Landry, not that of Ms. Moore, but of Dr. Landry, that being the reason why Ms. Dieff testified as she did. Beyond the express allegations of improper influence, there was also implied allegations as well. That first began through the cross-examination of Ms. Dieff herself. The way that trial defense counsel structured the cross-examination was to elicit concessions of non-disclosure at times when Ms. Dieff had the opportunity to disclose. It began with two concessions of non-disclosure and an attempt to get a third. All of those concessions, or including the third attempt, those all predated when Ms. Moore first revealed appellant's abuse to Dr. Landry. So trial defense counsel painted a picture for the finder of fact: non-disclosure, 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 therapy, consistent disclosure. The difference between those non-disclosures and then the consistent disclosure was therapy. That would lead the finder of fact to believe that the difference would be Dr. Landry's influence.
What is the standard? Suppose we agree that somewhat ambiguous statement that was made by the military judge was a conclusion that Dr. Landry improperly influenced DF, and we have to review that finding of fact. What is the standard by which we review that finding of fact?
Findings of fact are reviewed to be for whether they're clearly erroneous. This was not a clearly erroneous finding of fact. Those 2 months that the military judge mentioned, those correspond precisely with when Ms. Moore began, or I'm sorry, when Ms. Dieff began her therapy with Dr. Landry. And
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Additionally, trial defense counsel highlighted that the therapy began 1 month before the trial date. The reason for that concession, as trial defense counsel put it, or that allegation, was because Ms. Dieff was not consistently disclosing at that point.
Can I ask one related question, which is, I think it has to be the case that the trial counsel not only found that there was improper influence, but that defense counsel alleged that Dr. Landry improperly influenced her, and that thereby opened the door. How do we review the record to determine whether there was an opening of the door with respect to Dr. Landry?
Your Honor, I respectfully partially disagree with the underlying assumption. I don't think that the military judge needs to find that there actually was an improper influence, only that the door was opened by an allegation of the improper influence.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, and that's why I had to ask the follow-up question, which is that Dr. Landry's, the military judge's statement about September and August seems to suggest that the military judge thought that there was improper influence. But I guess that's not the real question. The question is, what actually did the defense counsel say that opened the door? And my question is, what do we review that question about? Isn't that just a legal question that we review de novo? About we look at the whole record and we determine whether defense counsel opened the door or not? Isn't that a legal question?
Well, at page 12 of defense counsel's opening brief before this court, they called the determination that there was a new influence as of September or August a finding of fact. I agree with them that this is a finding of fact, and this court should be reviewing that to determine whether it's clearly erroneous.
But that's the question of whether there was an improper influence. That's not a question of whether defense counsel, by their statement, alleged that there was improper influence. The defense counsel's position is, we never said anything about Dr. Landry. We were only talking about the mother. And you disagree with that. Isn't that a question that we reviewed de novo?
No, Your Honor, because it is getting back to what the military judge found as when the improper influence arose. And even defense counsel, in page 12 of their brief, style that as a finding of fact. And I would urge this court to review it as a finding of fact, given that both parties are in agreement that this is a factual determination made by the military judge. And it's one that's supported by both the express and implied assertions of defense counsel. When defense counsel says that Dr. Landry is encouraging Ms. Dieff to repeat false allegations, that alone is enough to allow the trial counsel to try to clear that up. Now, they say that they're painting a picture of a mother that's influencing the child. They certainly tried to do that, but they got painted outside of the lines. So the government isn't bound to only respond to what they're saying now on appeal, that they had this nice portrait. We can clean up the entire, all the paint they spilled all over the canvas. And part of that was the influence of Dr. Landry.
So, counsel, I have two questions to ask you, which is, one, with respect to the CCA opinion, they didn't address the specific issue, correct?
They did not. They styled it as the mother's influence in a footnote.
Okay, so, but in terms of their factual sufficiency review, they did find that that the mother, J.M., that her testimony was, quote, credible on key aspects such as the content of Ms. D.F.'s outcry and the lack of coaching of Ms. D.F. What, if any, weight do we give to that credibility determination in determining whether or not J.M. coached D.F. prior to the consistent statement? Right? If they said she was credible when she said she didn't coach her, does that basically end the inquiry with respect to whether she coached her prior to or after this statement?
It doesn't end it, Your Honor, but it does... It does lend quite a bit of support to the notion that Ms. Moore did not coach DF.
Okay, so a related question, which is, let's say that we agree with the appellant that the military judge erred in terms of the timing of the alleged influence, right? That he erred when he got the time wrong. Mm-hmm. And they haven't considered that in doing their Article 66 review. Do we say the military judge got this wrong, redo your Article 66 review?
No, Your Honor. There's a sufficient factual record for this court to make the determination on
its own. They didn't consider this at all.
It was litigated before the Army Court, and they simply did not put that in the in their opinion. But it was argued by the government that it was the... That it was the influence of Dr. Landry. The government's position has been the same both in the Army Court as well as here, and at court-martial for that matter, that it's the influence of Dr. Landry, the allegation of the influence of Dr. Landry that opened the
door. I understand that, but if we say you were wrong and the military judge got it wrong, and this was the influence that was actually alleged at trial, and the military judge improperly focused on the wrong influencer, right, and that hasn't been considered. You don't think that impacts the CCA's review?
It may impact the CCA's review. However, in the interest of judicial economy, there won't be additional facts that are developed by remanding for that review. This court has a full record. It will never be a more full record. You may get the point of view of the Army Court, but this court does have a more than adequate record to determine.
But they did their Article 66 review based on, at least in alleged, you know, at least in theory, an incorrect view of what the military judge did. Like, the military judge, if the appellant's right, got the person wrong, the influencer wrong.
That's correct.
Isn't that a game changer in terms of their legal and factual sufficiency review?
I don't believe that is a game changer,
okay.
Your Honor, because
okay,
it would...
We'll ask appellant what he thinks.
Why don't you think it is a game changer?
Because the service courts very frequently won't address every single allegation or every single issue that's put before them. They often say that we've considered all the issues, the following four merit discussion and one merits relief, things to that effect. So just because they addressed it with respect to the wrong influence, that doesn't mean that... I see that I'm out of time. May I?
Please answer the question.
Just because they didn't explicitly address it in their opinion does not mean that they didn't consider the proper influence.
Chief Judge, I have one question, if I could. I'd like to go back, Captain Reiner, to the issue of prejudice here. And how do you respond to Mr. Feldmayer's assertion that in this bench trial, or this military judge alone trial, that the judge himself expressed his reliance on these hearsay statements in assessing the credibility of the child witness? You know what I'm asking? In other words, the defense counsel on his opening here indicated that, hey, one of the problems here is that not only does this boost the credibility of the witness, but the judge himself expressed his own reliance on those statements in assessing and believing the victim in this case. And there is where the prejudice lies from the defense standpoint. How do you respond to that? And I'm using his statements. I must admit, I'm not familiar enough with the record to know if the judge expressly said that. I don't remember.
I don't.
You seem to be suggesting your memory is as foggy as mine.
I did recently review the record. I don't recall seeing that in there. Perhaps there could be a joint appendix site given to that.
I'm not suggesting that anything on either part. I'm actually revealing my own failures, flaws here today. But we'll ask him on rebuttal. Thank you, though.
All right. And because appellant concedes before this court that they only have to merely make the allegation, that's something that very clearly happened both explicitly and through implication. This court should affirm the Army Court's finding because the military judge did not abuse his discretion. And even if the military judge did abuse his discretion, there still was no prejudice.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have a rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, I'd respectfully disagree with my learned colleague from the government concerning the Army Court's decision. At footnote 6, the Army Court, footnote 6 of the Army Court's decision, the Army Court explains its rationale for not reviewing in depth the admission of the prior consistent statement. The Army Court takes at face value, quote, the Army Court seems to follow the military judge in holding that DF's credibility was attacked, there was a statement, it was consistent, and therefore it's admissible, irrespective of the timing. The Army Court simply doesn't get into the timing, and if the court examines the quotation from the defense counsel upon which the Army Court relies, that's a quotation which suggests an influence that precedes the outcry. With regard to whether or not defense counsel alleged an influence from Dr. Landry, the government still hasn't pointed, well, just what was that influence? What statement did DF make that was somehow changed, altered in its content, after DF met with Dr. Landry? What allegation did defense counsel make? And the government can't point to such an allegation because such an allegation does not exist in the record. There's simply no place in the record where defense counsel alleged that Dr. Landry put new content into the testimony of DF. They certainly alleged that Dr. Landry was helping DF to prepare for trial, and that's not an improper influence. The rule doesn't require, even if it were an influence, which it isn't, even if it were an allegation of influence, the rule requires an improper influence, i.e., something that changes in the testimony as a result of the contact with this third party. And the defense counsel simply didn't allege that. Again, the test is not whether or not some influence can be divined from the record. The test is whether defense counsel alleged that there was an influence.
So, counsel, answer the question that I asked the government, please, which is if the CCA, if we agree with you that the military judge got it wrong about the timing of the influence, and if the CCA operated under the same error, right, do you believe that a new Article 66 review is warranted?
Yes, Your Honor. However, in that 66 review, this court, honorable court, should direct the Army Court to conduct its review in the absence of the improperly admitted statements.
That would go without saying.
Yes, Your Honor. But a new Article 66 review is appropriate because the Army Court relied on a clearly erroneous view of the law in conducting its factual sufficiency review.
Mr. Feldmeyer.
Yes, Your Honor.
You've seen me prostrate myself before the bench here on the issue of what is in the record regarding the issue of prejudice. Did I mischaracterize your assertion that the military judge in this case expressed his reliance on the on these hearsay statements and assessing the child victim?
Well, Your Honor, what I was getting at was that by implication he did. He found they were rehabilitative of the child victim.
I just overstated your position, maybe?
Slightly, Your Honor. Right. Otherwise, under a 403.
I apologize.
Yes, Your Honor. Otherwise, yeah. We presume the military judge follows the law, and the military judge was required to conduct a 403 analysis when admitting over defense counsel's objection these statements. So if they didn't in some way rehabilitate DF, they would have failed military rule of evidence 403 and not be admitted.
I mean, what's the purpose of the rule?
The purpose of 403 or the purpose of
The prior consistent statement?
To show that the influence did not in fact cause the person to, the declarant to change his or her testimony because the testimony was the same prior to the influence, Your Honor.
Well, interesting that you raised the 403 issue. In a bench trial, I mean, the judge doesn't read himself an instruction, does he?
He doesn't read himself an instruction, but if he wouldn't have admitted the statement if he didn't find it to be probative and rehabilitative.
All right.
I have 20 seconds left, barring any questions from the honorable members of this court. I thank the court, and the appellant thanks the court for its attention to his case.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. The case is now submitted.